If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I'm here again with my esteemed colleague, Allison Goodman. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
So we had a really fun guest today. We had my pal, Megan King, who I've known for a couple of years, who I really, really like. What are your thoughts on her? I saw that there was like also this controversy this week with David Yontef and Kelly Dodd and, you know, even Sarah Fraser, who we just had on Monday. We're talking about this big feud, and it all started regarding the fact that he had Megan King on the show. So that was like started. I don't
Did
know,
Megan
you know,
say something surprising.
No, I don't know. I think that Megan King was talking about a feud she was having with Kelly Dodd, who is we're a fan of Kelly Dodd on the show too. We're a fan of everybody. So, I love Kelly. I am very loyal to Kelly, but I don't know anything about their feud. I didn't ask about it because that's not why I have a podcast. I could care less about those things. But it stemmed some big feud, and even Sarah Fraser started posting about this feud. It was so fun to speak to Megan King. She's such a girl's girl. She's a real girl. What did you think about her?
I love that. Well, first of all, it's striking how gorgeous she is.
Oh my God.
Like gorgeous. No makeup. Gorgeous.
No makeup. So pretty. And by the way, I didn't ask her age, but she's got to be in her 40s, right? She has four kids.
She has three kids.
How many kids she also has with her ex, and he has more than one. She had a bunch. But yeah, she's got to be late 30s, early 40s, whatever it is. And she looks like she could pass for maybe 26.
Zero. Not a stitch of makeup. Gorgeous. That's the first thing that you think. And then I just look.
Undeniably gorgeous, and you kind of want to hate her, but she's just so nice.
I agree with that. But she's just so authentic, which how she describes herself and how she says she was on the show feels to me, as someone who watched the show and now, you know, was talking to her, is like, yeah, that's the same person. I love that, because so many of them seem like they are there to produce themselves and they act like it's their responsibility to build a character, make a show. And it feels like she was exactly the same.
Yeah. And she's always been a real person. Like, she comes from a really good family, which you guys will hear about. And it's interesting, you know, how her career ended up taking off, because she was in the back seat compared to her husband, which was a major league baseball star. And then this show, Real Housewives of Orange County, really blew her up, and she became the famous one, sort of. So, you know, and what's funny, not funny about her, but, you know, she has, if you guys watch the Housewives of Orange County ever, and you remember the one big deal storyline, which was that Brooks faked that he had cancer. And she's the one that you know, got to the bottom of it. She was the little investigator on that. So I think she's, you know, she's pretty ballsy.
Which is funny now because it comes up when there's ever a mystery. Someone will always joke, get Meghan King on the case.
Yeah.
Which they're not wrong.
Yeah. No,
they are
not
wrong.
Well, she had plenty of time on her hands then, as she does talk about, but I don't think she has much as much now. But
I'm guessing, yeah.
So any other thoughts you want to say before we let everybody listen?
Well, I mean, I love having the Housewives on, and I always joke that, like, you are the Kevin Bacon of Housewives. You are 6 degrees away from everyone. Anytime I mention someone, you're like, oh, yeah, I know them. So, yeah, anybody, if you want to get in touch with a housewife, just connect them to Rachel. You could tell.
Yeah, that's funny, actually. Yeah, and I know them randomly from all walks of life. The one that I still want to get on the show, too, actually, Teddy Mellencamp. Who I used to book her tables when I worked at Tao in Vegas.
You must know a lot of people that you book tables for then.
Yes, well, that's true. But I'm talking about housewives and also PK, obviously. But then he's a house husband, I guess. But then Tamara used to buy clothes from my baby store when I had Wyatt Lilly. So she even featured like one of our bags once on the show where she opened up the bag on the show. So I love her. I've got to have her on. But, you know, again, those people get so caught up in just talking about housewives. It's hard to get them to come on a show where they just talk about their lives. Oh, another
one. And
they
both have so much going on, those guys. So they would be great guests.
Yeah, for sure. And another one I'm excited about. I definitely have 6 degrees of separation from a couple people on New Jersey, but we are going to have someone come on in the next month, because the Housewives of New Jersey is coming out. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to have someone very close to the situation that comes on and breaks it all down for us. Probably a month after it gets started, just so we can really talk about it and have them teach us all the ins and outs of that show. So I'm excited about
Should
that. But anyway,
be fun.
Yeah. To be continued on that. So without further ado, please get excited. The one other thing I want to say is sometimes you see some of these people who are on other shows or on other podcasts, or you see headlines and news from them. So I know that last week Meghan King was in the press for doing another podcast, but you know, I do think it's important to mention that we ask a lot of different questions than someone talking about reality TV. So we do get to the bottom of who Meghan King is, how she got into the world she got into, and who she is now. So I really appreciate the conversation with her, and I hope you do too. So please enjoy Meghan King. Megan, I'm so happy to see you again.
I know, Rachel. It's been a while, huh?
Yeah. So I was thinking about it. The last time I saw you, the only time you and I were seeing each other, I guess, was on your podcast, Intimate Knowledge. And we had so much fun. I feel like it was like 3 hours or something crazy. It felt so long. And it was me, you, and what was the name of the girl? She was in Australia.
That was Leila DeVille.
Right. And we had a whole like sex conversation, and it was like so eye-opening because she was so, what is the word for her? She's free spirited or something.
She is. She's like, she's very evolved. She's a next level type of human when it comes
to. Right. And do you still have your podcast with her?
No, not with her. I actually went and started doing it, the Intimate Knowledge podcast, independently, and I put it on hold last summer. So we've been on hold for about a year now. And I just the other day, had talks with iHeartRadio to kind of like re-up that again. So it's, speaking of evolution, it's in an evolutionary phase, but it's not over yet.
Right. Okay, good. Because I do feel like so many people love to hear about your relationships and your advice on all that stuff, because you are so knowledgeable on all of them, I feel like. And we'll get into that. But it's really funny. I was at the gym this morning and I was saying that I was having you on the show, and I ran into an old friend of mine, and she's like, oh my God, you and Meghan have so many friends in common. And I'm like, who?
Really?
So I'm going to name them. Chris Dennis.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. Jim Oberheide.
No way.
I dated Jim Overhyde for a weekend. Did? One weekend, my friend who I was at the gym with introduced us, and he flew me to Chicago to meet him. And he's such a nice guy.
You know, he's engaged to my cousin. They're getting
married. She told me.
That's so wild.
It's so great. And congratulations to her. Her name's Bridget, right? Jim and I follow each other. So I had no idea that she was related to you, but I'm very happy for him. And
Bridget was my first nanny I ever had with my daughter, Aspen.
Oh.
She and I are really close.
Oh, yeah. I love that. So you'll be going to the wedding, I guess.
Yeah. And I went on a date with Chris.
I heard.
I heard.
Very handsome man.
I mean, it was I think I was a warm body in that situation. There was like no connection, but we had a good time.
Yeah. No, he's a nice friend. He's a friend of a friend who I've known for quite a while. They all stick together, those boys, Chris, Jim, their other friend, Fred. But good group of guys. So
small world.
Yes, yeah, small world. So all right. Well, before we get into you, because that's really why I wanted to have you on the show, this week has been really big in the world of kind of Bravo news and breakups. So I wanted to get your opinion on some of them because I feel like people would want to hear from you about this. So have you been following the story about Alexia and her husband? And she says she's blindsided by, you know, the divorce. What do you think about that?
I saw that, but like, I got to Google who Alexia is. What is she from?
I love that you said that. She's from the Housewives of Miami.
Okay. Alexia, what's her last name?
You know, I don't even know. Let's look it up.
Nicola, I found her.
Yeah.
Oh, I know who she is. I've watched that show enough to know who she is. Oh, that's sad.
So I take it you haven't watched this past season of Housewives.
No, what did he do? Did he do something?
Well, that's the whole point. We don't know. I think the storyline, I didn't really watch it that much, but I kind of was into it much more than I have been. And the storyline there was that they had some money problems and, you know, she's the one that's always had some interesting stories with her husband. Her husband died. And then they found out that he was dating a man and died maybe in bed with the man. I don't know. Yeah. Terrible.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it sounds like she's only been married for 2 years. To this guy, and they were always kind of talking about that they had money problems. So it sounds like you don't follow this and this isn't like on your radar, right?
No, I'm not good with this stuff, but I know money is the root of all evil. So.
Right. So I guess I want to ask your opinion on this though, because I feel like obviously we have Kyle and Mauricio, and divorces in the Bravo world are prevalent everywhere. I just only mentioned two, but like, and obviously you went through one after you were on the show. Do you think that if these people weren't on the show, you included that these divorces wouldn't happen?
I don't think that at all. No, I think that the show speeds up potentially divorces that are like supposed to happen anyways, or that these shows expose, you know, issues that are already existing. So, but my big theory, Rachel, has always been that, I think the reason that a lot of divorces happen when people go on reality shows, especially these Real Housewives shows, is because typically these women have taken a backseat to the man in their life, and they've taken a backseat in every single way. Like, you know, maybe they're just raising the kids. You know, I say that with air quotes because it's an incredibly difficult job that I commend any woman who does that as a full-time job. But you know, I hope the men don't necessarily always see it that way. And so when this woman, their wife or partner goes on a show and all of a sudden is the spotlight and like develops this newfound confidence she never even found, you know, it was buried inside of her, and she becomes independent financially and she's confident now and she's beautiful and people care and she's the center of attention. A lot of times the husband can't take that. And so then they'll like, you know, project issues onto the woman. And she's like, wait a minute, I don't need this. I got my own thing going on.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that must have been especially interesting for you, where you had a husband who was so well known. And then all of a sudden, I'm assuming people would come up to you maybe more so than him.
Yeah. That shift definitely happened. And also I think for me, it was even more than that. You know, my ex was retired from baseball at that time, and he was an exceptional baseball player. I got to hand it to him, but his star was, you know, he had already had his glory days, and my star was rising. And so I think that's probably just a difficult situation to be in as a human being to, you know, have your partner star rising when, you know, your glory days are done and over.
Right. Speaking of what you just said though, because I've dated a couple of athletes and I dated one in particular after he was famous. Mm-hmm. And I really noticed how hard of a time athletes have after their career is over. So many of his friends, they were all former athletes. They were all became alcoholics. They all really struggled with finding their purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, it's something that I really have noticed. And I interviewed Dwight Gooden recently from the Mets and the Yankees, and he struggled with, drug addiction and cocaine abuse. And it's so, you know, all these guys are such heroes to us, you know what I mean? And then to see how they don't know their purpose after no one's cheering for them is really sad. I mean, I'm totally going down a different path here, but it made me think of that because, he had this beautiful wife and this family, and all of a sudden you become famous. I'm sure he was also dealing with his own demons of not feeling good enough anymore, sort of, or,
I mean, it's not my job to stroke his ego. That's like a personal problem. But speaking from a different sort of perspective, my little sister played professional soccer for 9 years in the NWSL. And after she retired, she went down a similar road. And I think it's very typical of like when your whole identity is one thing and then all of a sudden that abruptly stops. That's a shocking transition for anyone, even if it's a chosen transition. And so there's got to be like some psychological space that any individual would have to take. And I saw it with my sister as well, trying to like transition into like the next step of like finding her identity after that. But the thing that my sister didn't do was become an angry asshole and try to ruin the lives of other people around her just because she was feeling like she was a little bit lost. And so that's where I have to point the finger at like a lot of these male athletes, because I think they're taking advantage of the misogyny that exists in our society.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's also a difference of her not being a narcissist, probably.
Correct.
These men are. So actually let's go back to your childhood, because I was really shocked when I did some research on you about how big your family is, and gorgeous, by the way. Everyone is better looking than the other.
You're so sweet.
So can you tell us about how you grew up and your relationship with your siblings and your parents?
Yeah, I grew up in a huge Irish Catholic family. My mom and dad met in college. My dad was a college basketball player. My mom was in nursing school. They fell in love immediately, got married 6 months later. They've now been married 48 years, next May. They're madly in love to this day. I'm the oldest of their four children. My next sister is a stay-at-home mom here in St. Louis. She was on The Amazing Race. She had a full ride scholarship to Auburn for soccer. And my next sister, Julie, is currently a club soccer coach in Wilmington, Delaware. And she played professional soccer for 9 years and was a two-sport athlete at Auburn, basketball and soccer. And my little brother, RJ, when he was 18, moved to New York City and became a male supermodel for the next decade of his life, and really thrived in New York and had this whirlwind lifestyle of, you know, walking around with these A-list celebrities all over the world. And then in addition to that, I have this massive, massive extended family. I'm the oldest of 19 grandchildren on my mom's side. My brother's the youngest of 24 grandchildren on my dad's side.
I love that. And do you guys still get together for holidays?
Yeah, we do. As many people as we can. Yeah. And we're all kind of spread out throughout the United States now, but it's nice because if I go to Oregon, I have a ton of family, or LA, or Montana, or New York, or Florida, or Alabama, or Texas. Everywhere I have family. So it's amazing.
So were you into sports as well?
I was. I was an all-state long and triple jumper.
Oh my God. High school. Wow. And your brother, did he do something athletic?
No, he's just glamorous.
He was just good looking. Okay.
Yeah.
This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. Mother's Day is quickly approaching, and if you're anything like me, it could be a struggle to find the perfect gift. I mean, there's so many times you can just get a scented candle for someone or a bathrobe. This year, I'm gifting beauty with LolaVie, the Jennifer Aniston-approved hair care. If you've been listening to the podcast, you know I'm a LolaVie fanatic. Their products make you feel like you have a spa inside your own home. The vegan and cruelty-free hair care line works for all hair types, because they take the time to formulate the naturally derived plant-based ingredients and then test on a variety of heads. And here at Misunderstood, we've got a treat for you guys. For a limited time, you can get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at lolavie.com. Just use code Rachel at checkout. Please note this is a new code for this brand. So just make sure that you are using Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L at checkout. Whether you want to spoil yourself or get something for mom, look no further than Lolavie. I've been using Lolavie for a while now, and I cannot say enough great things about it. My hair is my favorite accessory, so I make sure to take really good care of it. And Lolavie has been a huge part of that. Their products are for the shower, post-shower, every part of your getting ready routine. Personally, I'm obsessed with their signature scent. It's a mix of citrus and woody notes. It always feels fresh. My favorite products right now are the restorative shampoo and conditioner, and I absolutely love the detangling spray for my daughter. Everything feels luxurious. If you're looking to get mom on the road to some luxury, try some of Lolavie's bestsellers, and they will not disappoint. Unlock Jennifer Aniston's approved hair care at lolavie.com. As our loyal listeners, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use the code Rachel at checkout. That's 15% off your entire order at lolavie.com with promo code Rachel. Please note you can only use one promo code per order and discounts cannot be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Your hair will thank you. So, all right. And for people that are not watching this and are just listening, it's no wonder that you're a model because you're, you know, you're so gorgeous and you don't age. How do you do that?
Oh my gosh, Rachel. Well, I'm not a model. I mean, I did try modeling when I was 20 years old, which is two decades ago now, almost. Right. But, lasers though. That's the answer.
Oh, okay. Well, good. So tell everybody what you use, because once people take a look at what you look like, they're going to be like, what does she do? Stop talking. Just ask her about what she does to me. The way she
sunscreen and lasers. I go to Dr. Frank in New York City, and he's awesome on Instagram. I found him on Instagram. And so, yeah, I fly into New York. I get a laser. It's amazing. I love the city. It's perfect combo.
Do you do the, like the blood facial, the PRP, or which ones do you like?
No, I do the, I've been doing the Pico laser recently for my melasma that I got after I had my kids. Mm. And so that's when I like, but prior to that, I was doing a lot of microneedling to tighten and to like minimize my pores. So those are the two I do, but like, I've really kind of backed off on the Botox. Like you can see my forehead. Uh-huh. It's like there's a lot of movement, because what I found out, what Dr. Frank told me, is if I do too much Botox in my forehead, it will kind of like make my hairline recede because my muscles won't be working enough. So they just get like dead. I don't know. They don't work. And so like pulls everything back, something like that.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Well, you look like you're 18, so I'm sure everyone's going to be calling Dr. you. Frank at the end of this. So, all right. So what were you doing when you got asked to be on the show? Because I know that you were on some reality shows before that, right?
Yeah, I love being in front of a camera, Rachel. It's no secret. And I will own that all day long. I was, what did I do? Oh, I was actually selling pathology software. My home base was Dallas, Texas. So I just transitioned from an inside sales, medical sales job to an outside medical sales job. So I was trying to make my name in medical sales.
Oh, got it. Okay. And is that how you were married first, but then you got divorced and then you married Jim?
Yeah.
So before you married Jim, were you doing anything in front of the camera, or did that kind of reality stuff start?
No. Oh, I did. Yeah. I did this show called Resell Royalty based in St. Louis. I was kind of like, it was based around a consignment shop idea or a resale shop. And I was an employee, but I wasn't actually an employee. They just brought me in to film. It was highly produced. It was on the Style Network. It was, Rachel Zoe was an executive producer. So it was a fun experience.
Oh, wow. That sounds kind of cool. Did it do well, or was it just one season?
It was a one season wonder.
Okay. Got it. And was that something where people would recognize you, or like only in your hometown or something?
Gosh, I don't even remember now. That's a really good question. I don't think I was recognized from that. I don't think. Okay.
So you didn't feel like you were famous yet?
I did not. No.
And then tell me how you met your Jim. Sorry.
Well, maybe I was a little famous because I had a lot of Instagram followers, I remember, before I got on Housewives. So I don't know. I don't remember. And a lot, maybe like, you know, tens of thousands, kind of something like that. But I can't really remember. It'd be
but
interesting.
Weren't you on Say Yes to the Dress because of your wedding?
But that was right before I met, I married Jim. So that was before the Housewives too.
Got it.
And okay. I totally, was like, oh, Jim Edmonds is, you know, this guy I married. He's this famous, you know, guy. It'll be a fun experience if I get on. And I did.
Right. Well, yeah. And did you like it? Was that highly produced?
Highly.
So highly. Did you pick the dress? Did you wear the dress you got on the show?
No, I didn't even buy it.
Oh,
I changed my mind. I felt very pressured, and it wasn't like I got a discount or anything. It was really, it was like high pressure selling.
Oh, they wanted you to buy it? They weren't even giving it to you for being on the show?
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. Did they pay you to be on the show?
No, I don't think so.
Wow. Okay. I love this. This is such a good scoop. Okay. I wonder if they pay people now to do it, because they don't really do a celebrity version. Well, I guess as you're saying, you weren't a celebrity back then.
I don't think they do. Hey, yeah. I wouldn't. I mean, everybody thinks it's a fun thing to go on TV. I like kind of made, when I was on Say Yes to the Dress in New York, that's where we filmed. I kind of made it into a mini bachelorette party. So like I brought a few of my friends with me, and we did like a whole weekend in New York as a bachelorette party. So that was like kind of thrown in there with it.
Got it. Okay. So now tell people how did you meet Jim?
Mutual friends. We were in like the kind of same social circle.
Got it. Okay. And how did you get approached to do the show? Was it because you were his wife, or did you know someone that was on the show?
Jim knew Heather and Terry Dubrow, and he had a house in Southern California still, even though we were living in St. Louis. So we'd go out there often. He had two daughters out there. Heather and Terry invited us to their groundbreaking party with their, you know, the Dubrow Chateau. During that groundbreaking party, I went and got a drink. When I was getting the drink, David Bedore was offering me like, oh, like, nice to meet you. Can I help you with your drink? It was Shannon's first season. And no one knew anything about them. And Shannon ended up getting upset with David that he offered, you know, to get me a drink without introducing her to me. And so since there was like a little drama about that, I think that I caught production's eye, and they reached out to me to cast after that. But the interesting thing is that Jim's ex-wife, who he was married to prior to me, also got a contract, but like, you know, like years before me. I don't know when it was, but it was like at least a couple years before me. So, but I mean,
when they were married?
when they were married, but like going through a bad time, like they were not going to survive. But she would have been great for the show too. I mean, she's a big personality. Jim's current wife, I don't know anything about her, but I do know that I have a big personality and that his second ex-wife has a big personality.
Oh, that's so funny. All right. So maybe Jim was meant to be the, you know, the husband on the show because so many of his wives were going to get picked. So what was it like for you doing that? I mean, obviously it affected your marriage, but I'm more curious. So I didn't really watch the show that much. Obviously I watched a little bit, but what was it like behind the scenes, I guess? Like how much of your life was on camera? And then did you feel, I mean, I know I've heard you talk about how you were very authentic, but did you feel, well, how did you feel? I mean, it must have been interesting all of a sudden really skyrocketing in the minds of, you know, everyone around you.
It felt strange at first because I did feel like there was overnight celebrity. Like I did feel like all of a sudden I was getting recognized in the grocery store. And like that was a strange adjustment that, again, I welcomed. And yet like the transition was really intense. And so it was like a little bit depressing for me initially, but I learned to embrace it. And again, it's what I wanted. It's what I chose. It's just happened to me. But like when I was on the show, I told myself, I made an oath to myself that I would always be authentic to who I was and I wouldn't do anything just because production wanted it. And I kept that oath throughout my 3 years of filming. So that was the one show that I can truly say The Housewives was not produced at all when it came to me. The only thing that was produced is like, you know, setting up where I'm going to go to lunch or something. And the reason for that is because they have to pull permits and, you know, make plans because they can't have just like a random restaurant on camera with like random people on camera. I mean, there's a lot of back end work that has to go into that. So that was the only thing produced for me. Now, Jim, I think like I was 30 years old when I started that show, and I'm like an old school romantic, and I really truly see the silver lining and everything. And I'm a very optimistic person. And I think that is, I think that during the times I was on the show, that kind of looked like naivety. And I think it was. So I think I was like more self-righteous than I should have been because I was naive. And it's really kind of hard for me to go back and watch those shows.
Yeah.
A young version of myself, because I think I would have handled things differently today.
Right. And then how close were you really to those girls when you were on it?
Very. They were authentic friendships. I mean, I wasn't friends with Vicky, but I was very close with Heather, very close to Shannon, very close with Kelly, with Tamara. Even Lizzie, she was on one season. I wasn't close with Lydia. I wasn't close with Peggy. And I think that's everyone I filmed with.
Right. And do you think that you were like really known for being the person that, you know, outed the whole cancer, fake cancer situation? Or like, do you feel like that was not part of your legacy?
I think that's definitely like probably my entire legacy. That and like, yeah, definitely that. But people think that production fed me that storyline. And I read somewhere that Andy Cohen wrote in his book that production fed me that storyline. I got to go find out if that's true because production did not feed me that storyline. And I just had a lot of time on my hands. I wasn't working. I'd quit my job in medical sales. I was living in California full time trying to help Jim's 16 or 17 year old daughter get through high school. So she wants absolutely nothing to do with me. I have no friends because I'm in a new city. So yeah. And I'm like naturally an investigator, and a friend of mine who Jim's other ex, a different ex-wife, his first ex-wife was dying of cancer, and it was really hard on the whole family unit. And so I felt like this sort of duty to show that this dude was faking cancer.
But wait, remind me, that was such a crazy storyline or reality line kind of, but how did it even come to pass that you questioned it?
Tamara was like, well, okay. So the very first thing, backing up, when I the very first time I met Vicky, it was, she had a fiesta party in the backyard at her house. I was so nervous. Here I am, this young chick coming into this like tenured housewife, this OG housewife's party. But I couldn't wait to meet her because I thought we'd really get along because we had a, like two people who we loved in our lives battling cancer. And so I said something to her about it, like, you know, we're going through this together. We got to stick together. And, you know, what, is he doing chemo? What kind of chemo is it? Something like that. And the response that I got was very defensive. And I'm like, that's not what people do in like cancer culture. Like people are come together. They're inclusive. They support one another. They don't like push somebody off because they're asking a question about chemo. Typically, not saying that's like, there's exceptions to the rule, but that was a strange introduction. And yeah. So my spidey senses were alerted at that point, but then Tamara kind of like pushed me toward it. So maybe production pushed Tamara, who then pushed me, but production never pushed me.
So after that whole thing, I mean, I thought that that whole cancer thing was so crazy. And for people, listen, I don't know anyone who's been affected by cancer, but watching that storyline, it seemed that with, if you had two eyes and two ears, you could see that it was fake. I mean, and that's why I thought it was like the craziest scenario. And Vicky came off terribly for just being an enabler, and it almost seemed fake. By the way, where is that guy now?
Last I heard, he went to Florida and like was in a relationship with some other, you know, person he was hoodwinking.
Oh God. So, but did he ever get any backlash from that?
By the way, Florida, can we just talk about how Florida is the perfect state to do that?
Yeah. It's like all these Dear Johns here. By the way, I just moved from New York to Florida, and everyone, there's like smoke and mirrors about everything. You find out, I'll go on like three dates with someone, and then I'll find out like, that's not even their real first name.
Okay.
Well, that was my name on the app, and I just, you know, forgot to tell you, or I felt embarrassed to tell you. I'm like, what?
Florida.
Everything happens in Florida. Do you remember watching, did you ever watch Nancy Grace? Like, I'm a huge
person.
Every scenario with someone killing their kid or somebody going missing, something weird, always in Florida.
Always in Florida. Everything shady happens in Florida.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting what happens in my life. I've always wondered if I'll end up on a Dateline. I'm kind of secretly hoping.
No, don't say that.
The guy with all the wrinkles would be like, so let's talk about me.
Hopefully you're the one being interviewed. Yeah. Not the first. Yes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But he's amazing, isn't he?
Wait, who is?
The guy with the wrinkles.
Oh, yes. I know exactly. Yes. With the gray hair.
Yes. Yes. And wait, did you know that he's the stepfather to Matthew Perry?
No.
How weird is that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Very crazy. It was terrible when he died and he made a statement about it. But anyway, all right, we digress.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to me. I don't really care about the show anymore, but I just want to know, like, did you like it? Did you hate it? Like, I loved it.
I would do it again. It was an amazing launching pad. I think it's like easy to find the negative in it, but it really like propelled me to a new space in like my career where, or at least like whatever my career is, like it's always evolving and changing because I make it up as I go. But I mean the entertainment portion, I'm in real estate now. That part is not made up as it goes. That's pretty much set in stone. But yeah, so the Housewives was able to do that for me. And I'm forever grateful for like having the opportunities to be able to be an influencer while like staying home with my kids, especially my one child who needed a lot more attention with his cerebral palsy diagnosis. And so, yeah, I loved being on the show and I would do it again in a heartbeat. I don't love the idea about putting my personal life out there as much because when I was 30, I was a little bit more naive and didn't have as much to hide. And I use air quotes because the hiding part now comes in the form of my children and wanting to protect them. And so like, even though it's not, you know, there's nothing secret around my children, it's their lives, not mine.
Well, right. And also it's, you know, you had to put your entire divorce out there and maybe you wouldn't have wanted to do that. That could have been a little more private. And some people don't care. Obviously, have you seen Bethany now has a podcast about her divorce?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I don't think it matters for me either. My kids were really little when the brunt of all of that was happening in the public eye. And like, by the time that they are able to read it and like care to read it, I hope that like, I know that I will have had time to talk to them about you know, what happened, but I mean, they see it with their own little eyes anyways, like they're figuring everything out on their own.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. So you moved back after the show to St. Louis and kind of started over, right? What, tell me about what that was like and what it was like to go from being in the spotlight to then kind of having to really start your life over again.
It's funny, like you asked this question because just last night I was looking through a bunch of old photos. I'm placing an order with mixed tiles. Those are like the photos that you can do like photo collages on your wall. And so I'm looking through my old photos to find pictures of my kids, my family. And I was looking at them last night and I just like had this sense of despair that was bubbling up inside of me. So during like COVID, basically, my twins were 18 months old when it started. So basically from the date from when my twins were born, I think my marriage started falling apart. And so my twins were born in 2018. And by 2020, I was divorced, but it was just such a roller coaster and still is to this day. But I had my son diagnosed with cerebral palsy, COVID hit. I had my kids pretty much full-time, three preschoolers full-time. I had three in diapers at that point. And my ex-husband had publicly cheated on me and had left me. I had moved from California back to St. Louis, and I was dealing with an intensely traumatic situation within my family outside of anything to do with my husband. So like, it was such a hard time for me. And the fact that I even survived it is like, I mean, survived it. And when I say that, I mean, come out on the other side as a happy person who still has like my soul about me is pretty astounding. I have to pat myself on the back for it because like, I could have easily have fallen apart. I mean, I did, but here I am.
What do you mean by you did? Like what, how do you feel like, where were you at when you were at your lowest?
I was losing weight. I was, drinking too much, like after the kids would go to bed. I was, it was hard to find outlets to release my, pain because everything was shut down in the world. And it was just all very intense. So I felt like my life was just totally discombobulated. And the way I got it back was to piecemeal everything out and deal with one thing at a time. But prior to even piecemealing out, I really got into spiritual growth and therapy, and that helped like me to get to the next phase.
I've been through something like that where you feel like you can't parent because, you know, everyone has an opinion, and whether or not you do something right or wrong, that's kind of how you figure out parenting at the beginning too. And people would have such an opinion, and it was really hard. And then, you know, I had a husband, I think similar to you, that really just tried to make your life miserable. It had nothing to do with the betterment of the kids, right? Correct. And so, and, you know, to this day, it's been like 10 years, actually. And he's had other women, kids. He now has a wife and another kid on the way. And there's still this element of it can't be in the past. Like, he has to still try to just, you know, make sure I'm not happy for whatever reason. And it's affected me less, that's for sure, but not really, because it's the father of my kid, you know? So it is really hard. And so anyways, I understand what that was like. And I know what that's like to feel like you are all alone. People don't get it. But the only thing that kept me going is I have my dogs that I was like, who else is going to take care of these dogs the way that I love them? I'm a big dog person, like you, I see. And then, but also for my daughter, I was like, I do not want her going over there, you know, to that side.
Same. And, and I think like the hard part that was like really difficult for me to learn and probably one of the greatest lessons in my life is patience, because at the beginning of a contentious, situation like the one that I'm in and have been in, people's natural reaction is to think there's two sides to every story, or they're both a little crazy, or yada yada, which is like a natural human reaction. And the unfortunate thing is that as bad as I want to scream from the rooftops, no, I'm being verbally abused, I'm being financially abused, whatever it is, I will look like the crazy person if I do that. Now, I did do that. And that's like one of the things I probably would have changed. Not from the rooftops, but social media. But what I've seen now is that people will see your character throughout, you know, the years and how you act and how you react. And they're going to figure out the true story for themselves if they care. Otherwise they just don't care. People don't care enough. And so I'm seeing that now. Like I'm seeing that with, even legal professionals involved, other parents. And I like, it's not to say that, you know, they see that this person is, you know, a criminal or some sort of like horrible villain, but they definitely see me and my role as like a stable, loving mother.
Mm. Yeah. Which is so important and probably makes you feel like you've come a long way.
I mean, that's validation enough for me, you know, like that's the one thing that I care about in my life more than anything else in the world is my children and like making sure that I'm doing the best for them. And it's so, so hard for me. And the guilt that I carry with me is so hard when I look back to those years I was telling you about that I was going through that intense trauma. And I see those pictures and I know I couldn't have been the best mother for them that I wanted to be because I had to take care of myself in order to show up for them. And so the regret from those years is really intense just because I love them so much. But the only thing I can do is like be the best person going forward, you know?
Of course, of course. Now, do you feel like some of the reasons why you get into these relationships with people is because you want a partner or like a witness to your life? I mean, I'm only asking because I do. I just haven't been lucky enough to have somebody proposed to me a bunch of times, but you got married very quickly after meeting and you do well meeting men on dating apps or whatever. Yeah. But I would assume that it's because you are really open to having someone help you and love your kids. And to me, that seems like it would be, you know, something that really pulled me in. And I only date men now that have kids or want to be part of my daughter's life.
Yeah. And for me, that was huge because I always wanted that nuclear family. Like we discussed at the beginning of the show, I have a huge nuclear family. And so it was devastating for me when I lost that for my children. So I was like really hell bent on like fixing that, repairing that and making sure that I had that again. And it like my skewed version of what that was supposed to look like made me ignore red flags and jump into something new. And so like during the time since that like quick relationship that I then annulled, I did a whole lot of work on trying to fill that void that I was keeping open for a man to jump into. And I knew that that was a dangerous place for my whole family to be put into. And so I filled that. Now I think I'm like dating with like a healthy intentions in mind. But I do have to tell you, Rachel, there's this podcast you have to listen to. I just listened to it the other day and I sent it to all my friends who are in like incredibly narcissistic, contentious child custody stuff. It's Kristen Cavallari had this woman on and it was about co-parenting with a narcissist. And it's the most they gave you exercises and scenarios that were the most applicable to actually understanding like tools you can use to handle the situation with your children. And I've told everybody about one of my friends sent it to her therapist because she said it so perfectly mirrored her life so she could have her therapist really understand what she was going through.
Yeah, I will look that up. I just wrote it down. I think a lot of people who haven't been through that really don't understand. Like they don't get how difficult it is. They don't get how debilitating that gaslighting is. I mean, it's the worst. And by the way, I also have a narcissistic parent. My mother is very much that way. So the two of them, even though I don't think they liked each other at all anyways, became best friends because I was the enemy at that point, right? So, and then it was kind of like, you know, the scenario where I was the crazy one. I was the unstable one. I was this, that, and the other thing because I was involved in a scandal. By the way, years before any of this happened, like, I don't even know why that
happened. That has nothing to do with you as a mother.
Nothing. It has nothing to really do with me as a person now. I mean, it's been forever. And that was one blip of my life, right? So the fact that like people kept bringing that up, you know, was terrible. And I remember being in court and that was brought up. And you know, I couldn't believe that was brought up. It also was brought up. So I did celebrity rehab. And they brought up, this is more of a recent thing because I moved. So I had to go to court to get permission to move. And it was brought up by the lawyer, something about how I had been in rehab. And I looked around. I'm like, I couldn't believe it. And I looked at my lawyer. She's like, shh. And later I was like, I was paid $400,000 to do that. And not only that, it was love addiction. People that know me, I don't drink. I don't do drugs. My father died of a cocaine overdose. Like, I'm really against that stuff. So, you know, it's like, that was crazy to me that someone would play so dirty like that, you know?
People don't get
how bad the family justice system is, or whatever, the family court. Did you spend a lot of time in family court in LA?
None, all in Missouri.
Okay. Oh, in Missouri. Okay. But
still there, baby.
I don't know how corrupt it is there, but in New York, it is terrible. Terrible. Really? Yeah.
Terrible. I mean, it's terrible in Missouri too. It's awful. Like, I feel very abandoned by the family law system.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's because, you know, of the female version, and like, I would get really emotional and I would be like, no, that's not what happened. And it was just, I cannot figure for the life of me why I had such a difficult time in family court when clearly I felt like I was the more stable and, agreeable person. And it just came from a place like he was able to be calm and look really good and present really well. And to me, I just thought it was such a terrible situation. I never had anyone listening to me. And also there were times where there was complete lies said, and, it was like, nobody really looked into it. Do you know what I mean? And
I absolutely know what you mean, because I'm living that right now.
Still.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't say anything because there's an active lawsuit, but, yes, I can relate.
Right. Okay. So we'll move on from that. All right. Talk to me about, now you are in real estate. Did you always love real estate, or are you doing it because, like me, you're a single mom with a single income household and you will hustle and do anything you can to support your kids?
It's a combo of that. And in addition to wanting to kind of like move out of the public eye as far as my private life goes and move it, like stay in the public eye as far as like my career is. Where my career is going. But I've always loved real estate. I've always loved, I've bought and sold so many homes, decorated, remodeled, and helped like friends find homes. And I've been always very involved in like the closing processes as well. So it was a natural transition for me. And also I wanted to use my social media in a way that could help me in my next career. And so I'm a concierge real estate advisor. So what that means is that I can work with anyone in the, and this is a term that I coined, I can work with anyone in the United States or really the world as a sounding board. So they would hire me and then we would work with their home agent. And so they kind of have me as a sounding board. Should I tell my agent this? What shouldn't I tell them? And, they can have me as, a fly out there. But the main part is I promote their house on my social media.
Oh, amazing. Okay. And what else are you doing with that platform now that you have it? Like, are people paying you to do like influencer stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I just did a speech the other day. I spoke to a bunch of women about how to build a brand. So I am still, I'm still kind of involved in using the social media to kind of propel this next stage of my career.
Right. Okay. So I know there are a lot of people that think well, first of all, I would never want to have a 9-to-5 job now, would you? I mean,
no.
It's terrible, which is again, why it's like, if people come to you and are like, do you want to do this show? Even though you may know that it's terrible, although you had a great experience, it sounds like being on the show because you had good friends and whatever, but that's such an easy way to make money. I mean,
for sure. Yeah. Like celebrity rehab, pay me $400,000. I'll go to rehab for anything you want me to.
Exactly. Exactly. That was crazy.
Also, rehab sounds amazing. Can we just like put it like pause for a minute and think about how amazing rehab is? Listen, you get to go away and focus on yourself for like a certain amount of days and like relax and recuperate and do like some real soul searching and eat healthy food and just like get some real clarity. Like, hello, why is rehab looked at like such a bad thing? It's an amazing reset. Like, someone forced me to go to rehab, please.
Right. I know. It actually was a great thing. And people don't realize that, well, like you said, there are so many shows that are really produced. My experience in celebrity rehab, it really wasn't. I mean, you had cameras all in your face and I had never been on a show before, so I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But everything we did was real. And everything they edited was how it really was. And you got a lot of help. You went to 3 different meetings a day. I was around people who were really withdrawing. And the craziness that ensued was because people were nuts in there because they couldn't have their heroin and they were trying to break out. And Janice Dickinson was my roommate. She was nuts. And yeah. And so I left for a day, but really because I was really angry. I said to Drew in one of our one-on-ones, I'm like, she is acting out for the camera. She found out how much money I made, and because they gave paychecks, you know, every like week. And so she knew what I was making. She was pissed. She wanted her like time on the camera. And I said to him, I'm here to get help. Like, I'm here because you asked me to come here, but I really needed it. I was like a recluse at the time because my name was all over the paper. And so I just found it very interesting. And then I left because she made my life so difficult. I came back, but, and I loved those people. Like, I had such a good relationship with them because we got so strong from being in there and learning all about ourselves. And I really wished that everyone would be okay. 2 people out of the 8 have died from drug overdoses since, which is terrible. But 5 of us went and lived together in a sober house in Malibu after, because we didn't want to leave each other. And I was sober. You know what I mean? It was just a love addiction thing for me. So I loved doing it. I thought it was great.
Did it help you?
It helped me because I didn't know what love addiction was. And I was there to talk about losing my father and obviously being involved with the wrong type of man and why I do that and how I get my credibility from who I was with. And it totally made me learn all about it. And it gave me a ton of tools. And I love Dr. Drew. Like, he is so special to me because he makes you feel like you're the only person in the room and really heard me. And to this day, I feel like he's one of the only people that like sees me. Do you know what I mean? He really gets me.
That's a great, good. I'm glad to hear that was your good experience.
Yeah. I had a good experience. But, you know, it's interesting when you hear these people with this whole reality reckoning thing again with Bethany, that they feel like they were forced to do something to have airtime. And it's one thing to like, I don't know, like, what do you think about that? I thought that was pretty, that was like a stretch to think that people would be paid to drink and act like fools because they can only edit you so much because you act the way you act. You know, they can't make you into a complete asshole. You're not kind of acting like an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand that either. I mean, the thing that I think about, you know, being forced to drink or whatever, is that I think that's just a social pressure in general, that like, if you go to a happy hour, like you're probably going to have a drink, or if you go to a party, you're probably going to have a couple drinks. I think that's just like, it like internalized pressure that we put on ourselves. Like, production might say like, just go have a drink, but like, that's just, you know, a thing that we say, you know, it, colloquially speaking, it's like, oh, you need a drink or I need a drink. It's just too bad that alcohol is, you know, so ingrained in our society, but are we really going to blame that on like a bad edit? Come on.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. All right. So you said you would like to do reality TV going forward. Are there any shows that you would like to be on?
Yeah, I really want to be on Traitors. I just finished Traitors UK season 2. I really want to be on that. But what else?
I feel like I could see you on that. It's so good. I loved it.
I would be a faithful for sure. I really can't lie. And then what else? Oh, I think like it would be fun to host some sort of like dating show. I don't know, some sort of host position, something where it's not totally my personal life.
Right. I got that. Would you ever do something like a Love is Blind because it hasn't worked for you the other way?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't I don't really love that model. Like, I love watching that model and I think it's great for so many people, but like, I don't think it would work for me. I think it would work as like long-term friends. But no, I'm not. Those people are like 20 as well.
I know. Right. And it doesn't make sense to me because they kind of don't match up. Like, people have to have a job. You know what I mean? Like, that really affects life if somebody makes like $15 an hour.
Right.
I don't know why the casting department doesn't figure that out by now.
I know.
As you said, money is the root of all evil.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So what's your dating life now in St. Louis?
I'm dating, I I'm open to dating in St. Louis. I just haven't found anyone that's like lasted, but yeah, I'm dating.
Haven't found anyone to get engaged to recently.
I'm not engaged. No, I don't have plans to get engaged either.
Do you think you want to get married again?
Myself. I'm dating myself. I think that I want some, like an eternal commitment of some sort, but I don't know if that has to look like marriage.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And how are your kids doing now?
They are good. They're like this little three musketeers. I mean, they struggle with, you know, going back and forth and their parents not having a healthy relationship or communicating. And that's hard on kids. And it's hard on me to navigate three children alone, you know, like, what do I do for medical or school or what? It's an isolating place to be. And sometimes I think the kids can feel that, and they can feel the pressures that I have on me to like maintain my house and do everything there is to do for them. So I think naturally they're going to have some anxiety around that. So we are trying to mitigate that and therapy and talking to teachers, and I'm doing the absolute best I can with the resources that I have available. And I think I'm doing a pretty damn good job, all things considered.
Yeah. How old are your kids now?
My twins are 5 and a half and my daughter 7.
Okay. Got it. And I saw that you took your daughter to the Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah. So sweet. It was her first concert. It was so much fun and very wholesome. And it was a great special moment for us to share together.
I love that. Is she a Taylor Swift fan?
Yes. She really wants to go to Taylor Swift, but I couldn't get tickets. They're so expensive.
They're so expensive. And I'll tell you something, my daughter, so we went this past year, I guess. We went to Philadelphia. She's 11.
Okay.
And I'll tell you that it was so expensive, obviously. And we didn't do it in our city because it was too expensive in New York. So we went to Philadelphia and got better tickets. And I was like, this is so dumb. I don't know why anyone would pay this kind of money. It was like as much as my rent, you know, in New York. It was crazy. And so I agreed to do it. I went. It was so worth every penny.
Really?
To watch. It almost makes me cry talking about it. To watch how excited she was so fun. And that kind of energy, I've never seen anything like that, where everyone's standing up and singing every word. Yeah. And it was such a good concert. And we just had the best time. And it was so much bonding for us. So eventually, you know, if it comes back around or whatever, you should totally think about doing it. I mean, she's probably a little young, but it's so now Taylor's coming to Miami in October. Yeah. And Wyatt's my daughter's name, is so funny. So I've been dating like you online. Yeah. So she and one of her friends from school started an account online for me, and like on Hinge or whatever it was, somewhere where I wasn't dating. And they write in the comments, so it looks like it's coming from me, and it's all spelled wrong or whatever. It's like, you know, I only want to date a man that can afford Taylor Swift tickets for me and my daughter.
That's so funny. But also true.
Totally.
Yeah.
Not true. Yeah. It's like, so, and I have these guy friends. I don't really let men come around her anyway. So I have male friends. And when she meets them or hangs out with them, she's like, what do you do for a living?
See,
she's checking out if they can afford it, which is hysterical.
Because
the tickets in Miami are even more expensive than they've been. It's like $7,000 now. Yeah.
Oh,
it's
crazy. My gosh.
It's crazy. Okay. So after all these years of living your life publicly, do you think people have an accurate idea of who you really are?
I don't know. It's tough for me to really gauge that, because I kind of see myself as a character as far as like the public sees me. Like I'm, you know, something of like a Mickey Mouse, and then like Mickey Mouse has his private life that nobody knows about. Sorry if that my grass is getting cut. It's very overgrown, but I don't know. I hope that people see me as a truthful voice of reason, but I think that because of the unfortunate card that I chose, that I've been dealt with my ex, I think potentially people could think that like I'm a little, I don't know, out there, wacky, unhinged. Like if there's anybody who's on team ex-husband, then they're going to have like the most awful things to say about me ever. So I don't know how I'm seen. Do you know?
Well, no, I mean, I think people would probably talk a lot about the relationships.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh that yeah. Cause I've been married. Yeah, that's true. Maybe that.
And I don't even know. I think that it stood out more because of the whole Cuffy thing. Is that his name? By the way, what kind of name is that?
It's his name's Cuff. It was a family. Yeah.
Oh, Cuff. Okay. Okay. It's cool. It's very like preppy or something. But I think I remember watching comments because I think I had done your podcast like in the months before that. So I felt like I, you know, was friendly with you. And I watched the comments and so many of the comments were like, oh my God, girl, can't you like date for a little while? Or can't, you know, why do you have to fill that void so quickly? By the way, I get comments like that all the time too, if I date anyone, you know, or I did at the time. So it was like, I totally got it. But then, you know, I think that that stands out probably more in people's minds or,
yeah,
you know, they remember
maybe so.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's, which is like, I it probably would for me too, if I was, you know, an outsider looking in, but like, that's the thing about being a public figure, you know, you can, I'm a big personality and I love really big and I'm a romantic. And so it doesn't shock me that that's something that I fell for. It's not something that I was, that I desired, but my partner at the time really, really highly desired that so much that I felt so much pressure and I saw that it was very important to him and I'm very used to making sacrifices for someone I love. And so that was the sacrifice was that I got married again. And like what? I would have a stable partner who was able to like be a father figure to my children. I mean, that's what I was thinking and that's not what it turned out to be. And I took the necessary steps to, you know, remove that from my children's life. And that's all I can do. So people like they have, can have your judgments about, you know, a choice that you made 10 years ago or about like a choice that I made whenever it was 3 years ago or whatever. But the fact of the matter is like, I am who I am today. And that's like always growing and changing. So if you want to judge me for that, like I don't really give a fuck.
Yeah, no, I love that you say that. I'm curious. Cause I remember when my parents got divorced, I was 5. And then I know how my daughter reacts. My daughter doesn't love when I date people now. She's very protective of me and she's kind of not nice, which that's a problem. I mean, she's very nice. She's just not nice to the men. So I don't introduce her. It's been a really long time anyways, but I don't introduce her to anyone for a very long time because number one, I don't want her to ruin it. And number two, I don't want her to feel uncomfortable like she's being replaced. And I think for a long time, like as a young girl, I know for me, my parents were divorced when I was 5 and my mom just started dating. I always felt replaced, like I was going to lose her.
Yeah.
Do your kids, do they have a strong relationship with you or did it become a little hard when they saw some different men coming in and out of your life and now they don't like
it? Like they never saw anyone. I mean, they were introduced to a few boyfriends that I've had, probably like maybe like they were introduced to my boy, like maybe 4 boyfriends that I've had romantically, Cuff, Trevor, Christian, maybe 3. But I don't do it anymore. They're old now, like they're 5.5, 5.5, and 7. They haven't met anyone and I don't even know how long, but as like a romantic partner, they have met people that I've dated, but as friends. So one thing that I always made sure to with my kids, when I did start dating was I would say I'm going on a date, but then I thought, oh gosh, they're going to associate this with like me being taken away from them. So I started saying date for everything. I would start saying date. Like if I would go out with a girlfriend for dinner, or if I would go to an event that I had to attend, everything was a date. And so they've now like, and I do have a lot of friends. I have a lot of gay male friends too, who will like come and stay at my home. And the kids don't know the difference between like a romantic partner and a friend at all. Like they don't even think about it. And so I kind of have been seeing someone a little bit and it's been a several months now to the point where like it could be getting close to introducing the kids. But guess what? I'm not ready. Like the, like I said, the kids are older now and they are going to remember this, this person. And like, I would want to introduce him as a romantic interest. And cause that's like where my intention is headed, but long-term potentially, but like, there's no rush. And that's, that's what I've learned, just to be a little bit more patient.
Oh, good. I love that advice. Okay. Last question. What is a real authentic Meghan King day?
I like to wake up really early and play Wordle on my phone before I get out of bed. I'm trying to save money. So I canceled all my gym memberships, but I have a treadmill, free weights and bike in my basement, like unfinished basement. So I'll go down there and maybe do some yoga or run. And then I do all of that before my kids wake up, and then they wake up and make them breakfast, get them out the door. And then at that point, I'm all ready for my day. I try to get dressed up, like do my hair, do my makeup, so I feel good about conquering the day. And if I can get a workout in before I start my day, I am golden. And then like the rest of the day, I mean, obviously like emails and stuff, like, you know, housekeeping stuff, but I'm trying to sell homes and I'm trying to still do my influencing stuff. So like today I have this job with Mixed Tiles. So I got to like submit all of that and do the story. So then just like housekeeping stuff with that, get my kids from school. It's nice here. So like the last couple of days we've all jumped on the golf cart and like driven to school on the golf cart. And then I'll come home with my kids. They're really intense. So I usually have a nanny helping me after school days because I'll try to work until 5. It doesn't always happen. So like one wants to play and one is hungry for a snack. And anyways, I do that. And then after they go to bed at 7 or 7:30, if I do want to do anything that night, that's when I'll leave and I'll like grab dinner with a friend or like a glass of wine. And then I'm in bed between 9:30 and 10:30 every night.
Wow. And do you have a book you're reading?
I have a lot of books that I'm reading right now. I'm reading, what's it called? It's something about your ego, as well as a novel and a book of poetry about, that I'll just like open and read like a little stanza about, just female empowerment. So like, if I'm feeling down, I'll look at that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And are you binging anything on like Netflix? Do you watch TV before you go to sleep?
Sometimes. So today I just finished Traitors, UK season 2. So that's I love to binge stuff. That's my problem though. Like I'll do a lot of things that I do, I like to do in excess. So I need to have like, but I'm good with boundaries though. So if I set boundaries for myself prior to going into a situation, I'll stick to it. So if I'm like, okay, you get one episode and then that's it.
Right. I'm the same way though. I've been watching, cause I live in Palm Beach now, I've been watching Palm Royale.
Oh yeah.
Really good. Yeah.
I've heard good things about that one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Okay. What can we expect from you going forward? Or is there something that you're like, want to call into the universe for you in the future?
So I am so committed to being the hardest working realtor there is on this planet and to growing that real estate business. So if anyone in the United States wants to buy or sell a home, I am your person. And that it will be no additional cost to you at all. And you will still have like whatever agent you want to use that's local, or we can find one together, but it will not take away anything from you. You'll just have me too, but call me first.
I love that. Okay. How can people reach you?
Find me on Instagram at Meghan King.
Okay. And you read your DM. So if someone wants to hire you, they can just DM you.
Yeah, they can just DM me. I have a realty page. It's Meghan King Realty. But they can find that, you know, from my main page as well.
Awesome. Meghan, thank you so much. I really appreciate talking to you. I hope that we are in the same city soon because I'd love to have a night out with you. I think we'd have a lot of fun.
Yeah, we will. We will. So great catching up.
You
thanks
too.
For having me. Of course.
Of course. Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.